can't sleep, trapped in my own mind. Anxiety. Drowning in the darkness, just can't see the light.
Depression.
Doubtful, insecure, can I really do this?
Imposter syndrome.
I'm alone, unloved, just feel invisible.
That's loneliness.
We're not therapists, but we need one.
Hello, and welcome to We're Not Therapists,
But We Need One.
The podcast where we have honest and vulnerable conversations about our mental health with one another.
I'm Jay.
And I'm Anthony, and neither of us are therapists.
But we're trying to help ourselves and each other by sharing our experiences and feelings.
In this show, we'll deep dive into topics like anxiety, depression,
self-esteem, trauma, and more.
We'll talk about how they affect us,
how we cope,
and what we've learned along the way.
We're not doing this to bash or blame anyone,
especially our families, who may have contributed to our mental health challenges.
We're doing this to heal and grow,
and hopefully inspire others who can relate and open your mind to your own healing.
We also want to warn you that this show may contain some sensitive and triggering content.
We'll be talking about personal and painful things that happen to us and how they still affect us to this day.
If you're not comfortable with that, or if you feel like you need professional help,
this show may not be for you. But
if you're ready to join us on this journey of self-discovery and self-improvement, we're glad to have you.
We're not experts, but we're honest and we're not alone.
Now, let's start the timer. Anthony, how do you feel today?
I'm doing well. You may notice a little bit of background noise in the office today. I have a printer going that is in my office, and I can't stop it for this, so we're doing it. Hopefully Riverside will get some of this and edit it out, but this is, again, unedited. You get what you get.
And if not, it'll just feel like the 90s.
Yeah, exactly. Just imagine, if you listen to the other podcast, just imagine it was what we were talking about in the last episode with the dot matrix printer.
Yes.
But no, I mean, it's been a good day. I was in a really good mood when I got up today. Mostly stayed in a good mood, even though work was testing me today. But yeah, Joe and I went to Grand Lake of the Cherokees over the weekend for a little getaway with just the two of us. We haven't gone on a trip with just the two of us without the intent of visiting people for like 3 years, maybe. I don't know. Maybe I'm over exaggerating that, but it's been a minute since we went on a trip that we didn't like have to go visit people, like friends or family or something like that. And it was just us, and we just spent time together. And so it was only a couple of nights, but it was really nice to get out of town. The cabin was beautiful. You know, I got Joe to, we watched like, Dawn of the Dead. We watched something else. I don't remember. And I got Joe to watch Midsommar on Sunday when we got back. So
that is such an interesting movie.
I love it so much. And he had never seen it before. So it was really cool to get to watch him react to people who are white and weird and not just you and I who are white and weird.
So, yeah, not reacting to ourselves in a mirror.
Yeah, exactly. How are you?
I'm tired. It's been, I don't know, this weather. We're having all this dreary, cloudy, cold weather and...
It's
throwing me in for a loop, but I've also been, Reggie's had a little stomachy thing, and so we wake up at an odd hour of the night to go poop, and so I have to go walk him for that, and so that's been happening in the past few nights, but he's not doing it in the house, so kudos to him, and I've never really recovered from a birthday party that I was at on Saturday that I think has officially stopped me from drinking for a while.
That was so, so funny in its own way, because we were at the lake house and I just kept thinking like, I need to finish up this podcast, but we haven't taken a trip like this in forever. And I just don't want to like interrupt the time that I'm not doing anything for once in my life. And I think it was like, what, 7 or 8 before you said it. And at some point I was just like, you know, I think Jay has just decided he's taking today off too.
On Saturday?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Let me tell you how Saturday went. It was supposed to be a brunch. And so it was my very close friend, and it was a surprise party. And so basically I snuck her to a I brought her to a place with one of my other friends to have cruffins and mimosa. And then we were walking to this brunch place that had a drag bingo show and all that stuff. So we went there, and then we basically closed the restaurant down at 4. And then my friends are like, hey, let's go to this other place. So then we moved over to this other bar that I discovered they do $5 glasses of champagne. And so went there until about 6 to 6:30. I think it was about 6 when I got home, and I had to go get a Brahms burger because I'm like, you have not eaten enough today, and this has hit you really hard. So I had to go get a Brahms burger. I sat down on my couch, was trying to devour this burger to calm me down, and I fell asleep in the middle of eating that burger.
Yes.
Then I woke up and I was like, you got to finish that burger. So I wake up like an hour and a half later, finish the burger, and then I come in and record this janky ass commercial.
I like the commercial. Honestly, I think it was great.
Well, that was me still, like, I was not sober. I don't know if I sobered up until the morning. And then Sunday was down day for me. I did nothing Sunday useful.
Well, still, good on you for taking some time. And I mean, you know, just enjoying yourself, honestly.
It's been a lot of hectic weeks and weekends lately. So it was nice to just go kind of be silly for a while without concern. And so it was nice. But and then Sunday, I definitely recovered. But I still don't feel like I recovered because today, like, I left work early yesterday for an appointment. And I was in at work late today because of an appointment, which, speaking of, I had my cancer checkup today, and apparently I have a tiny bit of tissue at the base of both lungs that is not inflating fully. And I looked it up like, oh my God. And it sounds like I'm just not breathing well while I'm working out.
There.
I was like, oopsie poopsie. So,
well, what did they say? Is it just sort of like incidental? It's not anything they're concerned about?
They wrote on there that there's sign of whatever it's called. I forgot what it's called. So, of course, I panicked and I looked it up. And it's like, oh, yeah, it's not serious. You could do breathing exercises and get back to normal.
Oh, okay, good.
And I was like, oh, okay, so don't panic. But I'm curious what my doctor will say on Thursday when I have my follow-up appointment to discuss results.
Yeah. How did you figure it out? Or was it just through regular testing?
So today was, I believe, my final cancer, like, scans and all. For, because at my 5-year mark, I can stop going back in for checkups. And so today we did a chest scan and then a body scan. Well, not a body scan, but like a torso scan. And so that chest scan is the one that showed that. I think one of the scans did, but other than that, everything's fine. What's weird is I don't notice it. Like, they said you could have shortness of breath, and I'm like, nope, been working out, not having issues.
Well, I mean, that's a good thing, at least.
Yeah, but now I'm like scared I'm gonna be like panicking all this time thinking I have short of breath.
I know. I hate that. I get so much in my head about stuff like that. And so that is to say, I empathize with that type of mentality because I get into that thought loop, and like, it's the negative thought loop where you're like, oh no, oh no, oh no. Well, stop thinking about it. Well, I can't stop thinking about it. Well, if you're thinking about stopping thinking about it, then you're thinking about it.
Yeah. It's definitely the rumination of what ifs.
Yeah. But, I mean, at least it sounds like it's probably not anything serious.
We'll see. Based on ChatGPT, it's not serious. I won't WebMD stuff anymore because I feel like ChatGPT is a lot more regulated on how it treats me.
Yeah, if you WebMD stuff, you will definitely find out that you're dying, and it's every time.
I definitely, well, it's annoying because now, like, I WebMD'd once, and I was like, oh, it told me I have cancer, and it was right.
One time WebMD got it right. Out of the millions and millions of other times, it's wrong.
I know, statistically, it's never that right, but that one time, it was right.
Yeah, that. And so you go in on Thursday?
Yeah, I have a follow-up with my actual oncologist on Thursday just to go over and make sure that my blood work and all is normal.
Good,
which
good.
I already see the results, but...
Yeah, I do like getting the results through, like, applications. I think that's one nice thing about the future is being able to see your blood test results early.
Yes, and not having to wait for that phone call.
Yeah, because I'm one of those people that will sit there and just freak out about it for no reason whatsoever.
Yep.
I will have absolutely no foundation for freaking out, like nothing at all, not even, you know, little things. I'll just be freaking out about it.
I'll never forget the very first time I had an STD scare, which I went to get an STD test for, and the amount of anxiety I had.
Yeah, that was, I think that's what really kicked it off for me, is I never used to get stressed out about medical testing, and then I had an HIV scare, and I didn't know anything really about HIV whenever it happened to me.
Yeah.
I spent weeks panicking because I just wasn't within that time period to be able to, like, know for sure.
Yeah.
And so I kept having to go back and get retested, and no matter the amount of reassurance and even, like, learning more about HIV and understanding that it's not like what I thought it was initially years and years and years ago, it just set me off on this anxiety path that I've been on ever since.
Yeah, for me, that kind of stuff sets me off on an anxiety path, because with my health history, I'm like, oof, if I add something that could potentially impact my immune system, like, I don't want another layer of that to my life. So that would be a scare for me. What's weird is my scare was literally just syphilis.
You know, I think I'm at a point now where I'd be like, you know what? That's probably fine. Just give me the antibiotics.
Just give me the butt shot. Yeah.
Although,
whenever I was getting tested for cancer and they hadn't figured it out yet, I was talking about pains down there, and they're like, we're just going to go ahead and give you antibiotics just in case it is an STD. And that ass shot hurts.
I've never had it before.
Oh, my God. Like, she poked the needle in, and I was like, oh. And she sits there and goes, oh, that's not even the worst part. And I was like, oh, no.
What? You can't just say that.
Oh, my God. It felt like she was injecting cement into my ass cheek.
Oh, my God.
And
that
I was like,
sounds
oh.
awful.
She goes, there's a lot of muscle in there that you're impacting. And I was like, oh, my God. I don't ever want to do this again. If anything, that gave me the fear of STDs, because I don't want to get another needle in the cheek.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that is one where I mean, it hasn't happened to me before, so maybe I would be a little less laissez-faire about it if, you know, it had happened to me. But I'm just like, I'm on prep. But yeah, I think back on it, and now I wonder if a lot of my anxiety was triggered during that time period, you know?
Oh, where, yeah, I can imagine that.
Like, it flipped a switch in my brain, and it just kept going, and it hasn't stopped ever since, and so now I take medicine for it.
You know, I've always had anxiety of some sort, but I can't really pinpoint a time that I just, oh, you know what, coming out, I had a lot of mental anxiety and shit like that back then.
Yeah, I think that's like almost the gay experience, and it's so wild because every story is so different. Like, you get these overarching tones for stories for coming out, where, like, sometimes people will be just absolutely terrified, and then their families are, you know, just fine. And then other times, it's they'll think it's going to be fine, and it's not. And I don't know. It just seems like it's such a stressful thing to do anyways. So I can see that. I can see a lot of gays with anxiety having that be the onset of their anxiety.
Well, and I had the anxiety of coming out because I didn't really know how my parents would be. I just thought they'd be a little annoyed. Oh, God, was I wrong? They were, like, terrible. But so then my anxiety grew from that because it was just really unpredictable who they were going to be and how they were going to treat me after I did come out. And it just kind of went into this spiraling of chaos.
Yeah, see, that was my parents when I came out. I got a lot of, my dad didn't really say anything. And then my mom was worried about my soul for a good long while. And eventually, whenever I moved out and I wasn't dependent on them for anything, I just stopped talking to them for a couple of months. Because I got tired of it. I told my mom, I was like, hey, look, I need you to stop asking. I need you to stop treating me like I'm this thing, like I'm this part of me, because I'm a whole person. I'm not any different than I was before I came out. I'm gay. I'm just letting you into this part of my life. But if you can't talk to me like I'm a human being, and you can't ask me how I am, and you can't do those things, then I don't want to talk to you. Oh my God. Not the Limu Emu on accident.
I love that my timer has an ad in the middle.
Well, that won't translate to the podcast. So, listeners, you just missed out on something funny.
Yeah, you just missed out on a hilarious thing. Sorry I laughed in the middle of your sad story, Anthony.
It's okay. I mean, it's been over 2 decades, so I think I'm going to be okay.
You had to struggle with your parents? No, I'm kidding.
I mean, I laugh about it today because now I have a decent relationship with my parents compared to what I thought I would after I came out. It's not great. It's not perfect, but, you know, it's not bad.
I think back because there was just an era where I would say it felt kind of like that sick Victorian child. Like, they were just like, oh, we need to stay away from you because you could be contagious, but we have to love you because you're our kid, but we know you won't be around long and we can't stay connected with you. Like, there was this very strange disconnect. I will actually never forget my senior year of high school. It was awards night or something like that. All this information went out about it in the mail. I told them nothing about it, and so I was the only kid there without my parents. And I think the next day, like, I got scolded by them because I didn't tell them. And I was like, you guys are the one who get the mail. It's written to you. What do you expect me to do? And they're like, you could have reminded us. And I said, no, 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 no. You teach me responsibility. That's your responsibility.
Yeah, seriously, it's not my job to manage your parenting. That is entirely wrong.
And I think at one point, like, they kept going, and I said, it's not my fault that you're not interested enough to keep up with my life.
And you're not wrong.
And then I never heard anything beyond that. Like, they stopped scolding me, because I think that really hit a spot with them.
I mean, it's just true at that point. And so shitty. And it's funny because, like I say, I have a decent relationship with my parents. My parents do not ask me about what's going on in my life. It does not happen that way. So I wonder if it's problematic of, like, their generation and the happenstance of growing up in this part of the country.
I almost feel like that generation got a lot of, like, embedded narcissism in some sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
yes.
Like, my parents never apologize. They never really do anything wrong. when I try and call out our relationship stuff, it's definitely like I'm having an issue and they are not a problem with it. They're just pray for me because I have a problem. And so it's there's no accountability.
Mm-hmm.
Like me, I'm like, yes, I'm being accountable. And what I've discovered is you are not healthy for me.
Which is, I mean, that's 100% right. This is, we had my mom come and house sit for us for the couple of days that we were gone. Because she likes to do it and it gets her out of the house and lets her, you know, just be away and have her own time. But I will not forget, we were on the way from, I had picked her up. We were on our way like to Tulsa. And she was telling me about this like credit card bill that she had paid way too much of. And she was like, I got blamed for it. Your dad blamed me. And I just know that I didn't do that. I just know that I didn't do that. And I was like, I mean, one, if he's upset with you for paying too much, like they got it fixed. The credit card company fixed the problem. And so it wasn't like they continued to have an issue. It didn't cause them any sort of financial distress. And so I was just like, well, I mean, I've done that before. Like I accidentally paid off a credit card that I didn't mean to pay off because I accidentally clicked full balance instead of like keeping the highlighted number on the amount I wanted to pay. And I had to call them and get them to correct it. So I was like, well, I mean, the money was there, but I need it. So you need to give some of it back to me.
So I need that back.
And they were fine because I'd never done that before. And like, it was, we worked it out. And I was like, it's, you know, it was my mistake. I clicked the wrong button. And even if I didn't do it on purpose, it's still just an accident. Like stuff happens. And I think that's very indicative of what you're saying because they were trying to like place blame there. And I was like, well, you got it resolved. Why does it even matter? Why are you even talking about it anymore?
Well, that's it. Why does everything have to have a blame?
It is so weird, but it is generational. I think you're 100% right about it. And you run into it in workplaces.
Oh my God, yes.
It drives me insane there because I'm one of those people that in my head, if we have a problem, I don't really care whose fault it is if we can get it resolved and it doesn't keep happening.
And I'm also one of those people that if I did make a mistake, they'll be like, oh, Jay did this. And I'm like, oh yeah, you're right. Easy fix though.
I'm okay saying I'm in the wrong. That did take me some time to like remedy because I was raised by my parents. And so I had to really get over my ego and understand that making mistakes is just part of being human.
The idea of being wrong and the idea of allowing someone to place blame on you was just unacceptable. And I'm so glad I grew out of that.
Oh, me too. It's such an exhausting way to live. But I think you're right. I think there is a lot of, and I don't even know if I'd call it pride necessarily. I think there's just a fear of being wrong that's built into that generation somehow. Yeah. And, you know, obviously that's not like blanket statements are always blanket statements. There's always exceptions. But, you know, for the purposes of this conversation with my parents and your parents...
But, I mean, you look at it from the... Of course, there's going to be outliers that aren't that way. But our parents, a lot of our workplaces, it's all a lot of similar people. And mm-hmm. So you start to blanket it because it's like, well, this seems really common in this situation.
It is. I was texting you a little bit earlier. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, and I was like, and it's not even this amorphous idea that we've created that we're like, oh, they do this and it's a big problem. No, it's like, it's just, we know it. Like, it's obvious. It's not the same thing as like this whole trans push that pedophiles. I'm like, no. You're putting a blanket statement that's not even accurate at all. Mm-hmm. Because of your amorphous idea you've created.
That feels more like a, that is somebody trying to push an agenda somewhere.
And is
basically lying about things because you can statistically find that this is not true.
Exactly.
Like you can find easily that's not true.
Yeah.
but I feel like this does, it is sort of rampant, and it's an American ideal sometimes. I don't know. It could be existent outside the country. If we have non-American listeners, let us know. But like, it's very American to not want to make mistakes and to not, and to place blame. We want to place blame places. And there are times, there's a lot of times that blame either doesn't need to exist. Like somebody may have made the mistake, but it's really not like anything you can do about it. Or it doesn't exist at all, and we're really trying to find a place to put the blame because we need that for some reason.
We have to have that justification. We always look at companies that have things that go bad. Somebody always gets fired, like a higher up, because they're like, well, we have to pick someone. And so you're the representation. I'm like, can we just not chalk it up that shit went bad?
Yeah, seriously. We were talking about this earlier at my work because we have forklift drivers at my work. And they will, we had people who were working in shipping, and one guy was chatting with another guy who was on a forklift. The guy on the forklift was watching where he was driving, and somebody else backed into him with their forklift, and they wrote up the guy who was talking to the guy on the forklift, saying that he was distracting him, and he wasn't even like the guy who was on the forklift hit anything. Somebody hit him. And so it was just exactly what you're saying. They were trying to place blame and like write somebody up to say, yep, we did something about this, when you haven't solved any issues. You haven't really done anything. You've done something, but you haven't done anything constructive.
Yeah. And there's always this, we need to learn from our mistakes. So who do we blame so that way we can figure out the mistake?
Yeah. And I very much do not, I don't care for that mentality at all. I've learned in work that it doesn't do anything. It doesn't really progress anything unless you have consistent errors that are happening. And then you need to understand whose fault it is so you can fix it. And because it's probably just a training issue.
I'm literally setting myself up for failure a lot because I tell my boss, I'm like, oh yeah, if we ever need to place blame, like, just choose me. I'm like, because one, to me, the whole blame game is, it's just some way to pin it on somebody so we can like use them as an example for training. And I said, fine, I don't care if I'm the butt of that. It does not bother me. And two, you could criticize me all you want. I'm going to be like, all right. I throw me in the fire. I'll take care of it.
I mean, yeah, basically. And we do experience that a lot at work. And I was texting you earlier today about some things that were popping up at work that I'm living for the work drama. But we have a lot of issues with getting some of our team members to like get paperwork correct and get it submitted and get it uploaded. And it's constant, and we're constantly having to ask for it. And now the people who are responsible for that are asking for us, for my team, which is basically just me and one other person, to add more workload onto our work every day to allow them to verify issues sooner with the paperwork that they already aren't verifying and aren't even uploading, because we have to go do that for them, even though it's their job. And it's only isolated to the plant that we are in, because we can't physically go downstairs at North Carolina and upload their paperwork for them, or at Washington and upload their paperwork for them. And so I was telling my coworker, I was like, this is exactly what is going to happen, is the very first time it's wrong, you and I are going to get thrown under the bus for this, because they love to play the blame game, and now they're adding work onto us because they won't do it properly. And so we're currently like in this like conversation with our boss that I'm like, look, like I'm going to tell you exactly what's going to happen here, and I don't want to hear anything about any of this being wrong and it relating to us in any way, shape, or form, because at the end of the day, they're just not doing their jobs, and we've asked them to do it 100 million times. I've got all the paperwork. I've got all the emails. I've got all the receipts. So it's, I don't know, just going on about placing blame. I just know that it's just going to be a way to try to shift blame from them to us, even though it's not our jobs.
I'll never forget when I turned into that guy that whenever I needed information from people and they wouldn't give it, like, I just stopped chasing them down. I made sure that I gave them ample notice of 2 to 3 times on the day it was due as a department-wide situation. And if they ignored it and the information wasn't filled in and their manager asked them where it was, they'd be like, one of them would always be like, well, Jay never reminds me. And I was like, hey, he said that in a meeting once. And everyone was like, Jason's 3 emails the day of if you haven't sent it. And so then it was so nice to have like all of that backup because they're like, everyone else is getting it in. Why can't you handle this? And I just was like, I'm going to let you burn in the flame and figure it out yourself because I'm tired of rescuing you. And I'm tired of holding your hand. Yeah. That's not my job. It's none of this is my job. And you are on your own.
Yep. And it's that shifting of blame that I think is just, I don't know. I think a lot of times people try to attach blame in those situations because they don't want to feel responsible for it. And they feel like if they've made a mistake that they're less of a person, I guess, and they're less valuable as a person. And that's a pretty strong sentiment amongst people that I've seen. Yeah. And it's hard to break. And I get that, but
I do. I understand it, especially when you don't take the time to like kind of self-reflect and learn.
Yeah.
How a lot of things that we think up are issues are not really issues at all.
Well, and making mistakes doesn't decrease your value as a person. It doesn't make you a bad person. It just makes you human. I mean, and we all do it and it just happens and you just have to accept that you've made a mistake and learn from it and move on. Because all that fighting it does is makes it worse.
Ugh. Yeah.
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 And we're out of time.
Thank you for joining us today on our show. As you can see, therapy is not always easy, but it can be very rewarding and healing.
If you want to follow our journey and see how we progress, tune in next episode for the continuation of We're Not Therapists, But We Need One.
Join us on our socials, TikTok, Facebook, Threads, and Instagram, and email us at nopenottherapists@gmail.com.
That's nopenottherapists@gmail.com.
We would love to hear your thoughts on our journey or any questions you have that we can help answer. Until then,
stay safe.
Mental health is a serious and important issue that affects millions of people around the world.
If you or someone you know is struggling with depression, anxiety, trauma, or have any other mental health conditions, you're not alone and there is help available.
You don't have to suffer in silence or feel ashamed of your feelings.
There are many resources and support networks that can help you cope and heal.
Here are just a few.
The Crisis Text Line, which is a 24/7 service that connects you to trained crisis counselors who can help you with any type of emotional crisis. You can text HOME to 741-741 in the US or Canada, or 85258 in the UK, or 50808 in Ireland. You can also visit crisistextline.org for more information.
The National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which is a 24/7 service that provides free and confidential support for people in distress, as well as prevention and crisis resources. You can call them at 1-800-273-8255 or chat online at suicidepreventionlifeline.org.
The Headspace app, which is a meditation and mindfulness app that can help you reduce stress, improve your mood, and enhance your well-being. The app offers guided meditations, breathing exercises, sleep sounds, and other tools that can help you relax and cope with your emotions. You can download the app for free and try it for 10 days or subscribe for unlimited access to all features. You can find the app on the App Store or Google Play or visit headspace.com for more information.
These are just some of the resources that we have found helpful, but there are many more out there that can suit your needs or preferences. The most important thing is to reach out for help when you need it and to know that you are not alone. Mental health is not a weakness, but a strength, and taking care of it is one of the best things you can do for yourself and your loved ones. Until next time.